We're doing Pekamot with Rabbeinu Yonah, and we're up to the second chapter, the 14th Mishnah. Rabbi Elazar Omer, we have been learning the quotes of the disciples of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, so now we're up to Rabbi Elazar ben Arach. Rabbi Elazar says, Hevei shakud lilmod Torah. So the word shakud is an interesting word. Some translate the word shakud as focused. Others translate the word shakud as diligent. Still others translate the word shakud as swift, because Hashem says, "Ki shoked ani al devari," I am hastening my decree to come to fruition, and that's possibly why the almond tree is called a shaked, because it is swift to ripen. It is one of the first trees to blossom in Israel. So, different interpretations as to what the word shakud means. Rabbeinu Yonah will translate that you should be focused. Hevei shakud lilmod Torah. Veda ma shetashiv lepikores. You should know what to answer an, what is an apikores? Oh, one who follows the Greek philosophy of Epicureanism. Okay, so actually there's a machlokas. What's an apikores? Apikores sounds like it comes from the word Epicureanism. That was one of the Greek philosophies, right? So it definitely evolved to mean an apostate. Whether the Mishnah means an Epicurist or an apostate, we will see that the commentaries generally learn it means any apostate. You should know how to answer an apostate. It doesn't say you should answer him. It says you should know the answer. Vedan, you should know, lifnei mi ata amel. Who is your employer? Before whom are you working? And who is the employer who will ultimately pay you your wages? Okay, explains Rabbeinu Yonah. What does it mean? Hevei shakud lilmod Torah, sheyikva atzmo lilmod Torah. A person should set himself to learn Torah. As the verse says in Mishlei, praised is the person who listens to the Torah, lishkod al daltota yom yom, who is diligent, he is set to come learn every day. So a person has to set himself to learn Torah. It's not enough that a person catches a shear here, catches a shear there. There has to be a set learning in his life. Kedei sheyedah la'ashiv al divrei apikores. That's the only way you'll really know how to answer when you're challenged by apostates. And in life, we do find ourselves challenged. Sheim lo yishivohu kefita anotav vishkarav yilamdu olam mehem vishtu mayim ara'im birotam kenotzeach otov nimtza shem shamayim mitchalel. Because sometimes a person is in a scenario where they have to answer. And if they can't answer, so then people will learn from the apostate. And people will ultimately drink those bitter waters that the people will be misguided when they'll think that the apostate won the argument. And then that's a desecration of the name of heaven. V'epikores shebekan, says Rabbeinu Yonah, what do we mean when we say an apikores in this Mishnah? Hu kofer b'torah shebealpe. That someone who denies the oral law. V'wadin lemorim panim b'torah shel okan l'chabit. You should know, same is true about a person who teaches the Torah and he is in error. He misapplies the Torah. Sometimes people say, here, the Pasuk tells you this. Yeah, that's not what the Pasuk means. The Pasuk says an eye for an eye, so you got to take out an eye for an eye. No, you don't. That's not what the Pasuk means. So there are people who try to teach Torah, but they're teaching it improperly. So that's also an apikores, a person who teaches Torah and he goes against our tradition. So where does the word apikores come from? So Rabbeinu Yonah says, apikores comes from the word lashon hefker hu. Comes from the word hefker. He's a person who tramples on the Torah and makes the Torah valueless. Hefker is something that a person considers valueless, something that a person considers ownerless. So he makes the Torah as though it's ownerless. Anyone can say whatever they want. So that's one of our responsibilities when we learn Torah, to know how to answer people who do not value the tradition of Torah. Veda, Rabbi Elazar says, I want you to know, lifnei mi ata amel, Before whom are you working? When you're arguing with this apikoros, with the apostate, and you're refuting him, be careful not to be seduced by him. Be careful not to be taken in by him. You shouldn't be drawn by his opinion. You should know that the one above is actually in full knowledge of what your thoughts are. So one of the keys to being able to answer an apikores is also the purity of one's heart when one is learning. If one is learning and one thinks I'm doing the will of the Ribbono Shel Olam, so then his learning is more pure, and when his learning is more pure, then through that he has the ability to answer those who are less pure, those who take the Torah to their own vices. They apply the Torah in whatever direction they please. But if a person learns Torah and they themselves are partial, and so their Torah is not pure, so then they're going to have a hard time answering the apikores, because in fact they themselves haven't purified their Torah. So this is a very hard thing, right? To purify ourselves in our learning Torah. But okay, we're given the direction where we should aspire. Yeah?
Is an apikores only a Jew can be an apikores? Are Christian missionaries also considered apikores, or is it something completely different?
I don't think a non-Jew would be an apikores. Usually in Shas, they're called a min, not an apikores. But I don't know if the answer is different. I don't know if the Mishnah wouldn't apply to a min as well.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, especially halakhot, how to deal with those persons, right? Like how to answer them.
Yeah, generally we try to avoid them. It's only when we have no choice that we deal. Yeah?
But what about the situation that often happens when you're in family or family gatherings, whatever, and you're not really qualified, learning-wise, to give the best answer to a person who even has more false information, you know, killed, like the murder, for example, and this and that. But are you supposed to keep quiet, or are you supposed to
I think with regard to the question of what to do when one is in a scenario with family members or other people who are questioning, they have misinformation, and one feels that one is not really qualified to answer, yet one has a lot of information that one can impart. So I think there are a few questions that would define the answer there. I think the first question a person has to ask himself is he strong enough not to be pulled down by the questions? Because we don't enter situations which we're not prepared for when we're risking ourselves. So my responsibility to help someone else is not at the expense of my risking myself. So that's the first question a person has to ask. Do I know enough that I'm not worried about being pulled down? If the answer is yes, I'm not worried about that, it's just a question of will I represent the answers well enough, so then I think so long as a person is honest with themselves and the other party, so long as a person says, look, I'm not the mouthpiece for Judaism, and I haven't learned enough, but as far as I understand, the answer is this or that or the other thing, so then I think that's important that we play that role. We do that when we host people for Shabbos. We do that when we meet people and they ask us questions about Judaism. Sometimes they have an agenda and sometimes they don't, and sometimes they seem like they have an agenda, but in fact, they're really open and listening. And sometimes during the conversation, it seems like they don't buy anything you say. And months or years later, you suddenly discover that conversation had a real impact on their life. So I think so long as a person's confident that they're not going to be pulled down, and a person is honest with themselves and the other party, so then I think it's okay to give answers. I don't think it's a good idea to get into prolonged debates where you have to stand there defending Orthodox Judaism. That I don't think is worthwhile.
Is it okay to give answers? within our realm of understanding. Like if they're like nature loving and environmentalist, you say, "Oh, Shabbos is so great because we don't."
You can point out to a person the parts of Torah that jive well with them, like the Gemara also says. You don't come and bombard a person with all the Torah at once. You share with them what works for them, and slowly they'll learn what else is there, but you do not change the truth. You don't have to tell them every part of the truth. You don't have to come to a person the first Shabbos they're keeping and tell them, you really shouldn't A, B, C, D, E, F, G. I mean, we've had people come to our house with cell phones and car keys. And right now what they're learning about is what the Shabbos meal is like. Even the people who are already observant sometimes come to our house and make mistakes, and we don't tell them anything. I don't think it's our job to correct a person or burden a person with levels of observance that they might not be ready for. But there's a marked difference between withholding information and misrepresenting. Meaning, I don't have to give every piece of information in the beginning, but I should not lie. וכשאתה מייגע את עצמך בתורה, תשתשע בה. שמצינו שאמרה תורה, השם קנני ראשית ערכו קדם מפעליו מאז, וכתיב בתרי, ויהיה אצלו המון ויהיה שעשועים יום יום. הנה לך כי הקדוש ברוך הוא היה משתעשע בה וישך לעשות כן. A person should find the Torah entertaining. Don't just learn Torah as a subject, but use the Torah as a part of your life, as a part of a person's entertainment. As the Pasuk in Mishlei describes that the Torah is Hashem's entertainment. So too, for the individual, the Torah has to be something that he deals with not only out of the seriousness of learning in the Beis Medrash, but also as the thoughts and the, so to speak, the entertainment that he has outside the Beis Medrash as well. The verse says, "Misacheket b'tevet artzov shashuayet b'nei adam." That's what the verse indicates. That wherever the Torah is, the Torah also gives that aspect to humanity, an aspect of interest beyond the learning in the academy. Just as before creation, the verse says that the Torah was, so to speak, Hashem's entertainment, so too, after the Torah was created, so now it's supposed to be our entertainment. We learn Torah, we respect Torah, we value Torah, and we deal in Torah not only out of that seriousness, but also as a part of our life outside the Beis Medrash as well. So there's a question here on this line in Rabbeinu Yonah. The Talmud says in Tractate Sota that King David said in Psalms, "Zmirot ayuli chukecha," your statutes were my songs, and he was punished for saying that. And Rashi explains that his transgression was that he used the Torah for his own benefit. He used it as a form of entertainment. And the Torah is not meant for that purpose. And the question here is Rabbeinu Yonah disagreeing with that Rashi and Sota? Is there really conflict, or is there a different understanding either in the Rashi or in the Rabbeinu Yonah over here? But this concept that Rabbeinu Yonah speaks about so simply, that Torah should be a part of a person's entertainment, is actually seems to be going against Rashi's interpretation in Sota. Rashi says that when King David, when David HaMelech was scared, he used to think about Torah in order to overcome his fears. Now you can imagine, David HaMelech had fears. He was going out to war. Sometimes the odds were stacked against him. And Rashi explains that that was the transgression. You're not supposed to use Torah for your private use. And the question here is, so what did Rabbeinu Yonah mean? Did he mean along the lines of Rashi, or did he mean... No, a different idea. That's why I translated Rabbeinu Yonah as, even when you're not in the diligent learning, it's part of your thought process, it's part of your life, not as a form of pleasure. When I said entertainment, that's why I worded it as you think Torah and talk Torah outside the academy, outside that seriousness. If you translate Rabbeinu Yonah that way, then he's not really contradicting the Rashi's interpretation of the Gemara in Sota. But that deserves further delving into. Yeah.
Is it a mindset thing, like how you start off? You could, for example, find the Torah entertaining. It could provide you with delight and entertainment. But your reason for studying the Torah is because you want to search and not because you want entertainment. And need something like that. You're like relying more indirectly on the Torah. David Amelin, it sounds like he needed something to get his, understandably, his mind off like manish everything. And so we actively sought to use the Torah to be that outlet. But instead of using the Torah as an outlet, you could just do it. I'm studying Torah for the sake of heaven, for the sake of, because Hashem wants me to study Torah. He commands that I study Torah, so I'm studying Torah. But it just so happens that it takes my mind off other things and provides me entertainment.
I hear what you're saying. It's a possibility for sure, yeah. Sounds like a good answer. Yeah.
If everything is in the Torah, and, you know, to be able to, I mean, when Yaakov was ready to make Esau, and he was going to war, whatever, I mean, so King David has been criticized for studying the wrong pasuk or something. I mean, you know, the Torah is supposed to be appropriate for anything that we face in life. Just you have to know where and what Torah. Entertainment is a tough word, because usually entertainment describes escaping from what is ideally you should be doing, you know, recharging. But to live Torah, it becomes so encompassing that, you know, that's the natural thing you'd be talking about. It's hard to see that he's getting criticized for that, but I'm taking that out of context. I don't know.
The wording of the verse, Zmirot Ayuli Chukecha, it sounds like I use your statutes as my song. Meaning, so.
Without thinking about it, just because he likes the melody?
So Sefer Hasidim explains the Gemara like you just said. That Zmirot Ayuli Chukecha is that he would just sing song the Torah without thinking about it, and that he'd use that song. But according to Rashi, it sounds like a lot more along the lines that Akiva was suggesting. That he, when he was scared, to get his mind off his problems, he would go into Torah. And you could go into Torah for the sake of Torah, and then the side effect is you get your mind off your problems. But to go into Torah for the sake of having a therapist game to get your mind off of Torah, that I think, again, I'm not sure. Because Rashi, Rabbeinu Yonah doesn't quote Rashi, and Rashi doesn't quote Rabbeinu Yonah. So I'm not sure. There's another question here, which is that standard that the Talmud tells us that David was held to, is that a standard for all of us? We're assuming the Mishnah is the line for all of us, whereas the Talmud in Tractate Sota, we have to wonder whether that's something that for David HaMelech on his level he was held accountable for, or it's something for all of us. I don't know.